It is a beautiful Monday morning.
That's not a good start, is it, Jordan?
No.
Let's say it like this.
Try and apply that theory to any other industry in the world.
It's a scam.
I was betting like 70, 80K.
This is the Trademate Sports Betting Podcast, helping you beat the bookmakers.
Hi guys, Alex here. Welcome to episode 90 of the Trademate Sports Betting Podcast. Today I'm joined by a man that has been a professional sports bettor for 11 years. Rugby league is his bread and butter, along with NBA and horse racing. He has also done a lot of fantasy sports betting too. Before becoming a sports bettor, he actually worked for a bookmaker too. So we'll get into that. Should be quite interesting. Chris Ryan, welcome to the podcast, mate.
Geez, thanks very much. Thanks for having me along, Alex.
No, anytime, mate. Really excited to have you on. I think this was a bit of a selfish booking on my part, because I've always wanted to get someone on who bets rugby for a living, or rugby league in this case. So, really interested to get your insight on, just the rugby league betting market in general, like how you go about your way of doing it. So we'll get to that kind of throughout the middle of the podcast. But what I wanted to start with was, what I just mentioned before, how you used to work for a bookmaker. Can you tell me, a little bit about your time working on what most people like to call the other side of the fence?
Yeah, I worked for Racing Odds back in 2008, 2009 for a short period. It's a bookmaker that's no longer around. They got bought out by Sportsbet. But they were owned by Sean Bartholomew, who's a well-known horse racing identity, horse racing punter, and he used to bet in telephone numbers. So working there and being part of that environment, you learn a lot. You learn a lot about how a professional punter goes about things, and dealing with the swings, the ups and downs of it all. So understanding it. How things worked on the other side of the fence was a great for the next sort of chapter, but it was sort of a hectic environment working there, and it was certainly a different time. This is 12, 13 years ago now. It's before limiting punters was a big thing, before profiling was a big thing, and that was certainly, profiling was almost non-existent then. So punters being able to get on for big bets was certainly possible, and at that time, Sean was betting, betting a lot back into the ring at tracks around the country, which I'm imagining a lot of bookmakers these days aren't doing. So it was a good experience and a great place to learn and a great place to pick up some good contacts as well.
Yeah, what exactly was your role with the bookmaker?
So I was actually the marketing manager there. So we were just a small team, and we worked at the Harrod Park Trot offices in Glebe in Sydney. So I wasn't actually one of the trading team, but I was watching the trading team a lot and picking up on sort of what was happening. And my job was more to get punters in, not profile them though.
Yeah, okay. So what kind of, did you have any kind of boss or like anyone managing you and telling you like ways that they wanted you to go about your marketing and stuff like that?
Look, to a degree, but as we were, it was only a pretty small operation then, maybe 12 or 14 staff members, not like a big TAB or Sportsbet is. I was really reporting directly to Sean, the owner of the company. Sort of a little bit more flexibility on how I wanted to go about, bringing in punters, and as a punter myself, trying to use that knowledge of what I thought somebody would want to join a bookmaker.
Yeah, so lots of accumulator promos, mate.
No, not too much, not too much. We had a big promotion where we sent someone on a first class flight to Las Vegas and put them up in a penthouse suite at the Bellagio, I think. That was one of our big promos at the time to sort of get people in.
Yeah, we were
a little bit less about that whole accumulator trick shot sort of style advertising that there is now of we'll bump this price up to $3 from $2, but max bet at 50. We weren't, yeah, that sort of a thing. And it was a different sort of time in the bookmaking world then.
Yeah, I mean, because I guess I would assume like maybe when you started, you had, I'm just guessing, like you maybe didn't have too many ideas about how to actually make money from sports betting long term.
Yeah, not a huge amount. Yeah, like, you know, when I, just as every bookmaker employee will tell you, you know, you used to bet whilst you were at work. So, you know, you sort of make a side income whilst you're there. And whilst I was in real jobs, you know, have a side income as you're building up. And certainly working at a bookmaker was a good place to be able to place bets and make knowledgeable bets whilst you were there, yeah, to make a side income.
Yeah, okay. And what was, I always ask this of people who have worked for bookmakers in any role, really, like, was there anything that just shocked you or like something that really like surprised you, like first time going to the other side of the fence?
The shock part of working in a bookmaker was probably how fast paced race day is. You know, you've got people flying in with bets, you know, 1, 2, 3 minutes to go, 5,000, 10,000 here and whatever else, so that your book could change quite rapidly close to start time. So it was a very, very fast-paced environment, the trading floor at the bookmaker. On the other side, like first going out as a professional punter, and I actually tried to become a professional punter before that, the sort of 3 years before that, and I was only 22 or 23. I didn't realize how undercapitalized I was to be able to make a money, to be able to make a living as a professional punter. My first year, when I very first tried, for the entire year, my only income was gambling, and I only made $15,000. That's obviously not much to live on. So I didn't, as a young kid, probably understand how undercapitalized I was to be able to turn over enough money to be able to make a living out of it. And you're just a bit naive and undercapitalized, and you just don't have the knowledge that you need to be able to make a full-time go of it. So I tried it for about 18 months. I was good enough, but not able to make enough. So then I went back into a job and then worked for the bookmaker, and then I went back out again and with a bit more capital and a bit more knowledge under my belt.
Yeah. So was it like was it quite stressful, I guess, going like, was it 11 years ago that you first tried becoming a sports better?
11 years ago since my second attempt. and the second attempt stuck. No, not too stressful. I think it's kind of crazy to say this, but I think one of the times that I realized that I'd made it as a professional punter was when it no longer stressed me. I remember maybe my first year, and I'd had a bad day on the races, and I think I'd knocked off something. I think I knocked off 20K or something. I remember just sort of lying on the floor going, shit, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money to lose. What are you going to do from here? And then I remember the same thing happening about 6 months later, and I'd been going well, but then I had a shocking day, something similar to that, and I couldn't have cared less about it. The day was over, lost all the money. Oh, well, let's go to the pub. And I couldn't care less about it. And I think that was a moment for me where I realized, okay, it's easy to deal with the ups and downs now. I've learned how to do it. I think I'm on my way here.
Yeah, and that first time that you tried going professional, like how educated would you say you were on gambling from like a scale of 0 to 10?
Oh, 2, especially compared to now. Like, you know, I did win, so I was educated enough to be able to place value bets, but not educated enough to make enough out of it.
Yeah, that's crazy. So what, you've gone from bookmaker to professional punter. Like, why did you want to do that?
Yeah, it's the financial freedom, and it's the freedom, the lifestyle freedom to be your own boss. I mean, it's a big difference not having to fight Sydney traffic all day, getting to and from an office. You know, I work from home and I've worked from home. Everyone's working from home these days, but I've been doing it for like 11 years now. And I think a lot of people will probably tell you it's much more enjoyable working from home. As long as you're happy, with your own company a lot of the time. That was kind of the big reason that I wanted to do it. But there was also got to a point where I wasn't probably enjoying the work at the bookmaker. And I remember being out on the golf course one day, and I wasn't enjoying golf. And I wasn't enjoying golf because I had to work the next day and I wasn't looking forward to work. I'm like, that's it. If I can't have fun on the golf course, I'm done. So I walked in the next day and quit.
Yeah. Was it like when you're sitting at work or whatever you were doing, wherever you were like doing marketing kind of stuff, were you sitting there and thinking like just maybe getting frustrated that you maybe because you've learned so much over your time working as a bookmaker, you've dreamt up and thought of all these great strategies and ways you're going to be able to make money full time. Was that like was it almost quite frustrating?
Oh, probably not frustrating, but because I'd already had a crack at it previously, 2 years prior to that, it's always sort of in the back of your mind, you want to have another go. Like, I don't think my parents were impressed the first time when I quit the job. They certainly weren't impressed the second time. But you just got to back yourself, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. All right, mate, let's talk about exactly what you bet on. I mentioned in the intro that you do a lot of rugby league betting. So for those who don't know, we've got a bit of a European audience, so people can understand that there is a big difference between rugby league and rugby union, or other people just call it rugby. So, yeah, you're betting rugby league, NBA, horse racing. Do you want to kind of go into, like, why you've chosen those sports in particular?
Well, rugby league is what I grew up on, from a little kid going to the football. So just years and years and years of watching the game, you're building up your knowledge base. So, when I had real jobs, I used to set prices for the rugby league on the weekend, even if I wasn't betting at it and I wasn't actually good enough to trust those own prices. I was practicing the art of pricing up an event. So because that was what is the sport that I'm most passionate about, it naturally became the sport that I was best at being able to handicap and understand all the different nuances that go into the game and then as a result, sort of understanding the betting market each week and how it moves and why it's moving and when it's going to move. That's why it's rugby league that is my bread and butter.
Yeah, and pricing up an event, can you talk me through that process?
Yeah, I sort of look. I don't bother looking at the rugby league starts on a Thursday. I don't bother looking at prices until the Wednesday. A lot of people will look at them earlier in the week, but a Monday, Tuesday price is a bit of a fantasy price because you could probably get on for peanuts. So what's the point? So I don't bother looking until after teams are released. Teams come out Tuesdays, and I tend to price my markets up on a Wednesday. Having watched all the previous weekend's games early in the season, I often will watch a game twice. There's new teams, new combinations, new players at different teams, so it might take me a little bit more to pick up on some of the small differences that teams are making, Then as the season goes on, might just watch every game once, might watch some highlights here and there to pick up something else that I might have missed on. And then you try and read as much content as you can. So I'm not just relying on my own brain. There's things that other people may have picked up that I haven't. You try and follow some other sharp people. Because there's always something that you haven't thought of yet. So I want to try and make sure that gets into my process. And then I'll go about pricing up that weekend's games. And as I go through it, I'll price up the head-to-heads, the handicaps, the totals, tri-scorer, a bunch of exotic sort of stuff. And then that price might move as we get closer to game time, as one, injuries make a difference, and weather makes a difference too.
Yeah. What kind of resources do you use throughout the week?
As I'm more of an old school handicapper, and I'm not relying on a data model as much as other people, I'm relying on my own eyes a lot more. I'm relying on what I'm seeing on a game a lot more. Sometimes I listen to a coach's press conference if you try and pick up something small, or like a pre-game press conference to just try and pick up on little small things here and there. Yeah, I mean, I read a lot of different content on Twitter. There's a few good rugby league analysts out there. I probably read less mainstream media. A lot of it's garbage, and it's not going to help me. And most of the mainstream media are pretty poor analysts of rugby league. It's more just, you know, hype stories and what have you.
Yeah. Okay. What? Because you are using your own eyes. Like, I'm not saying that you are, but I'm sure there's times where you feel like maybe your biases, whatever they may be, might be mm-hmm. influencing the way you're pricing certain things. Like, how do you come up with all those prices and then think, oh, is that like my bias because I don't, you know, I don't really rate this team, kind of, you know, those kind of things? Like, how does that play out?
I don't really have too many biases as far as its teams go, in terms of, I don't, like, people will talk about hating a team or hating a player. I don't have any of that. I don't have players that I hate or players that I love. I just have a player that I rate X amount or Y amount. And I have no problem pivoting from backing one team heavily one week and they won, and then backing heavily against them the next week. Yeah, that's probably something that, yeah, perhaps is a bit of an advantage that I have, you know, having a more of an even keel emotional connection to teams and players, and to not let biases creep in.
Do you have any kind of like ratings model, like, or some kind of table rankings that you go by like every week and update? Like, you've obviously got the NRL ladder or something like that, but do you, yeah, adjust it yourself into terms of like what teams you reckon are better than others?
I don't, because I don't think that will, I'm not sure what that will give me for my process. You know, I'm heavily week to week how things go, and they change each week when players are in and out. So I think it's important to know a lot of the secondary players. Like, if you had a player ranking, you tend to be looking at, you know, the top 13 players of each club. You're probably rating them. But it's important to know how good the 25th and 26th player is, because there's going to be times where they come in. And if your halfback's out, I need to know how competent the backup halfback is. Is he going to be terrible and we really want to be against him? Or can he actually come in and do a serviceable job? And the market might overreact to the star player being out, despite the fact that the backup is actually a serviceable player.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. And you mentioned earlier, like, one of the nuances to it is understanding when to bet. So you've got, you know, you've done all your pricing for the yep. week. You've got everything written down in terms of how you price every team. Is it just like, I've priced up the Broncos this week at 2.0, and as soon as they go to 2.01 or bigger, I'm betting it? Or are you like, oh, I reckon that, you know, the Broncos might actually get out to 2.1 and then I'll bet them?
So there's a couple of different things. One is keeping an eye on bookmakers and seeing which bookmakers are edging one way. If one bookmaker starts, you know, if the line's 6 everywhere and they start moving it to 5.5, it might not be long before everybody else starts moving that to 5.5. So paying attention to, yeah, more of a couple of bookmakers, not necessarily the whole market, but keeping an eye on those. Weather is such a big thing in rugby league. So following forecasts, understanding what direction a forecast is going, if it's heading more rain. Like, you might have a forecast that's saying it's 50% rain on Sunday, but is it going to be Sunday morning before the game? Is it after the game? Is it during the game? So keeping an eye on those forecasts makes a difference. Like, if it's going to be raining, you want to be trying to get that bet on earlier if you're backing in unders, because the line's going to push down. If it's going to be a bright sunny day and you know that, and it's going to be really hot, that's going to push a total up for a day game. So you want to be getting on early for that too. If you have the opposite viewpoint to that, you know it's going to go up, but I actually want the unders, then you want to wait to as late as possible so that price, that line gets as high as possible before you're back in the unders. And that's how the totals do tend to move. A day game, if it's hot, sunny day, the total moves up. and it's pretty basic, but that's how they do work. And if it's going to be raining, they move late, and they can move quite hard. Like you can, yeah. If it's going to be raining in game, which is much more important than just a wet ground, is raining in game, the market will react like late and hard. Like it can really push down, you know, from 40.5 down to 36.5 quite quick.
Yeah. So you're saying in terms of weather, like you think that's only really being factored into the market really late. Like if you are almost like a savvy meteorologist punter, like you can get on some good prices towards the start of the week.
You can, but I mean, it is factored in. The bookmakers do factor it in, but that doesn't mean that it's factored in correctly. Yeah, there might be rain predicted, so we've set a lower total. But if the forecast starts dropping what the expectation of rain is, the market might be a bit slow to react, get the total back to where it should have been originally.
Okay. And so if I had to like sum up like everything in terms of, yeah, all of your betting, like NBA and horse racing included, like what would you say is your edge over the market?
I think the edge is for each sport. It's different. It's definitely different for each sport. You know, some of them I do use some models. Rugby league, I'm watching all the games and using my eyes a bit more. It's different, and the way that people get an edge on in gambling is different for everyone. And there's lots of different ways to make money at it. Whether you're doing a data model, whether you're watching the sport intently like me, if you're backing market movers. If you don't know anything else, when you're just arbing things, if you're live trading, there's so many different edges. So I guess I will use bits of all of those across different sports.
Yeah. Do you do much live betting? I mean, I know it's tough doing it from Australia, but yeah.
Well, don't tell anyone much? If I do. I don't have any VPNs, nothing, none of that.
That's a good answer, mate. Well done. Yeah, so I guess like my next question, I mean, betting from Australia it's quite interesting because we don't have, I mean, we do have access to a lot of exchanges and a few sharp bookies. Like what's it like betting into those kind of markets? Because I know that the exchange commissions are quite heavy, especially on Betfair. And we do have, I mean, Top Sport or a sharp bookie, and all this, like all those kind of outlets. Like, what is it like from a bookmaker point of view? Like, trying to, because you say you try and use, you know, all sorts of different bookmakers. Like, how does that work out for you?
Yeah, I mean, the wagering market's changed a lot, particularly in the last couple of years on sports betting, where for the vast majority, Pinnacle, basically the biggest bookmaker in the world is no longer available to Australians for the most part. And then, you know, last year, you know, Rugby League started putting a big tax on bookmakers, which they just passed on to punters with bigger takeout rates. And Betfair now for Rugby League is almost unusable because their takeout rate is so high that they're actually you're taking a significantly worse price than you would just with the bookmakers. So the profitability of betting it has dropped. You know, several years ago, everyone was betting, say 5 or 6 years ago, people were fighting to bet $1.93, $1.94 lines, and then, you know, $1.92 was pretty standard. It's paired back to $1.91. And then last year, after they introduced the tax, you know, it sort of became $1.90 almost everywhere. So the ability to beat the market has become harder. As they just wanted to tax it more.
Yeah, most definitely. Have you ever tried using a broker like Sport Market to bet with Pinnacle?
Yes, I do use Sports Market through Malta, I think.
Yeah, through Malta. Yeah,
but that's not a choice a lot of people would want to make.
Yeah, why is that?
Well, to start with, a lot of people would be a little bit more sketchy on brokers, sketchy on going through something like Malta. Even people would have been sketchy about Pinnacle. I think they were based somewhere in the Caribbean. Bookmakers can get some bad raps, and there's, you know, been several bookmakers that have gone under here in Australia and a few other bookmakers just offshore who are betting to the Australian client base. It was shady and took a lot of client funds. So there wouldn't be that many people looking to go through brokers like that.
Yeah. Okay. Very interesting. What bookmaker do you think? I mean, I assume it maybe be someone like a Top Sport produces the most efficient prices for rugby league.
Yeah, it's definitely Top Sport. Like, yeah, if I price something up minus two, and the whole market's sort of minus 4.5, so they're a fair way off what I think it is, and I think the market should be moving closer to minus two. Top Sport's the one who's betting minus four flat when everyone else is 4.5. Might sound like a small thing, but they're the one who are edging their market to what I believe is where the closing line will finish at. They're the ones who edge it the right way. You know, they'll take a lot of smart money. And I think in the rugby league markets, where these days it's harder to get big bets on, a lot of small markets, a lot of small bets from sharp punters will push the market in the right direction. You know, people who are betting the early lines on a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, they might only be getting on for $500, but it can be enough to just edge the market half a point here and there if it's coming from a sharp client. So definitely Top Sport's the one who's the most efficient with it.
Yeah, what would the limits say be on a, just say, you know, win, I guess, money line or whatever you want to call it for a rugby league game, NRL game?
So that's going to be different, obviously, based on who you are, what client you are. With Top Sport, like, I guess within 1 hour of kickoff, the last hour of kickoff, you could get on for up to 10,000. Yeah. Totals, I wouldn't be able to get on for that much. Before that 1 hour, when final teams relief, 1 hour before kickoff, who knows? You might be able to get on for 5,000. It might be 1,000. And the day before, day or 2 days beforehand, yeah, often it might be $500, $1,000.
Yeah. And given the limited number of NRL games, for those who don't know, there's only 8 games every week and the season goes for 5-6 months. Are you, because it's such a, you know, not many games, are you betting basically every game?
Yes. Yeah. There's usually a way to bet on something every game, whether it's one of the major markets, whether it's a try scoring market, whether it's fantasy markets. Yeah. There's pretty much every single game. There's some skin in the game.
Yeah. How are you evaluating your performance just based on wins and losses, or are you also factoring in closing prices of, like you said, like a Top Sport, who you think's the most efficient?
Yeah, you've got to be evaluating it based on the closing line value. Wins and losses, particularly on a rugby league season, which is only 192 games long, it's a small sample size. So you could get the wrong view about how good or how bad you are based purely on wins or losses. But beating the market, it's the same every sport, every race. Beating the market is the best indicator of, you know, long term value.
Are there any games where you like to just, I guess, because I guess some punters might be moving the line in their favour to the point where they are getting closing line value, but it's only because they've moved it in their direction. Do you like to maybe stay away? You obviously say you bet every game, but maybe, like, you know, you might have a total here, or, you know, a handicap over here. Like, do you like to compare what price you would have come up with on that game, not bet it, and just see where it closed at to see if you're creating the CLV?
Oh, no, not really. I mean, sometimes I might be creating the CLV if I'm betting with 5 different bookmakers, bang, 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 all at once, for smaller amounts, but they all move the line in by half a point because I bet. Yeah, you might have created the closing line value yourself, but that is what it is.
Yeah, how hard in general do you think it is to beat the rugby league market nowadays? And because it's a completely different market with the, you know, introduction of data. Like, maybe have you seen like a real difference in the way that prices have been created since 2009 when you started?
I don't think that the market itself is that difficult to beat. Getting the bets on is the biggest problem. You know, it's not as sophisticated market as you know, NBA, NFL, major soccer leagues around the world, where there's thousands and thousands of punters and thousands of sharp punters betting into the market. So, yeah, those Australian sports, rugby league and AFL, they're not as difficult to beat as the other ones. As terms of has it changed over time? Yeah, they're quicker to react to news these days. I mean, all bookmakers are getting that bit sharper over time. So reacting to news, player changes, and even weather changes, they're getting better at it.
Okay. And
obviously with the rule changes last year, that changed the way that you had to handicap games.
Well, that was going to be my next question, was bringing those in, those new rule changes. Like, they're not just a slight rule change. Like, they completely changed the game in so many different ways. Like, is that like a stressful time for you? Like, and they've done it again this season, having, you know, even more rule changes with the 2-point field goal. They sped up the game even more by, you know, I mean, there's an argument to that too, whether not having the scrums and stuff like that equals more points because the defensive line is set. But I don't want to go into all that. But like, is it just stressful in general having all these, like, the, you know, the ballparks just moving all the time?
Definitely not stressful. I think you should view it as an opportunity. The market's going to change, so here's an opportunity for you to understand how the market will change or how it should change and react quicker or more efficiently than the market does, or how the bookmakers price it up. So, no, I think any of those sorts of things, it's an opportunity to challenge yourself and learn how you can beat it. So the totals in particular last year was crazy. I just looked back before. Like, so in the final series last year, there was a couple of, I think, Roosters and Canberra played two good defensive teams, and the total was 42.5, whereas in a finals like that just 1 year previously, it would have been like 34.5, 36. It's just gone up, and it just went up an enormous amount, and that just kept gradually happening throughout the course of the year after the COVID break when we brought the rules in. They just gradually kept creeping up. And then, yes, now we've got more rule changes again and potentially having the ball. The biggest difference is having the ball in play more often. More often, it's more opportunity to score points. Of course, you can debate about whether more tiredness means you attack less effective, or if there's less scrums, there's less attacking opportunities without the forwards clustered together. But the biggest difference is more time in play.
Yeah, so you'd be expecting even more points this year then?
You would so far.
Yeah.
A lot will, like those markets, a lot will change. A lot will change on after game one.
Yeah.
The Thursday night game, a lot will change for the rest of that weekend's games. People will start reacting to that very, very first game. And so you need to understand whether that's a real reaction or if it's a false reaction. There might be a lot of points in the game, but was it because of the rules, or was it because we just had a bunch of bad defenders out there? But, you know, if that first game goes, you know, 56 points, games 2 through 8 for the rest of the weekend, people will react to those. Normally they should be viewed as separate events, so what does it matter? But with significant new rules, yeah, there'll be changes. Or it could go the opposite way. We might have the first game sets a total at 44 or something, and it just ends up a bland 36-point game that people go, oh, the rules made no difference. So after one game, the market will react and potentially overreact.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, we could have a situation where we're looking at a sample size of one, and I know it's a very, very viable sample size of one because it's the first time not a trial or the All-Stars game. Like, it's the actual, like, example of NRL footy being played for the first time with the new rule changes. So, there will most likely be, if they're, like you said, a big points total or a very low points total. yeah, bit of an overreaction, hopefully, in your case, mate.
you just got to understand, whether it's a real reaction, whether they should be reacting like that. That's how you sort of find your edge.
Have you done a lot of scanning of trial games or the Indigenous All-Star game to factor in any of your week one prices?
I tend to avoid trial games so that you don't get clouded on a game that's not as important. I watched highlights from all of the games just to pick up on some positional differences and here and there, but I don't want to be clouded too much by trial games.
Yeah, I mean, unlimited substitutions has a massive effect, I guess.
And just motivation is very different. Yeah. The player's motivation and the coach's motivation to what you're trying to get out of a trial game can be different from one coach to the next. So you don't want to read too much into them.
Yeah, and how did you adapt? I mean, or how did you go in general when the first rule changes came out after the COVID break?
To be honest with you, I would say I was a little slow to fully appreciate the change, particularly in the totals. Perhaps not so much the fact that games could blow out a little bit more. So that's something that's an area, you know, for me to improve on. But, you know, that's quite early after the changes then, you know, adapted to it and understood what was happening in the games a bit better. And then, fine by the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I noticed was the handicaps. You could, like, if it was a really good team, I think the first example that comes to my mind is I think the Roosters played the Broncos a couple of weeks after. And
they beat them by 59 or something.
Yeah, I went way too conservative. I was like, I reckon the Roosters will win, and because of the new rule changes, you can see a blowout here. I think I went minus 20, but I could have gone. But minus 20 was like something like, you know, fives. I can't really remember off the top of my head, but I was like, this is a crazy price, and could have chewed a lot more meat off the bone there.
I remember the game. It was one-sided right from the start.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. I mean, it only took the bookies, two or three weeks, do you think it was, until they really noticed that this was a trend that was occurring, these big blowouts and also obviously more points.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah, it didn't take too long to adjust.
Yeah. Do you think they're going to change the rules even more going forward, or do you think this is...
Depends how long Volandi stays in charge.
not a fan of Volandi's?
I am not a fan of Volandi's. that's a serious answer too. How much they tweak might depend on how long he's in charge and reading our Facebook comments.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how in general the rule changes make an effect, because this time I guess they've had... How many months has it been since that was announced? Maybe 2 months. Like, they've had a full off season basically to prepare. Yeah. Are you kind of factoring that into your prices too?
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, coaches will be probably, from a defensive point of view, more than anything else, be looking at ways to exploit new rules. They might even be looking to give away intentional penalties that become six agains. So there'll be plenty of time this time as opposed to last time where it got thrust on them. To adapt to the rule changes.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see the likes of Melbourne Storm, Craig Bellamy. I'm sure he's already come up with a few strategies. The problem is he's got his best mate, Cameron Smith. He's gone.
he's gone, that's right. The referee himself.
Exactly. Let's talk about your fantasy sports betting too. You mentioned to me that you've been doing a lot of that. I guess just give me a general overview of what you're doing there and what kind of platforms you're using.
Yeah, it's probably a space that not as many people are quite as familiar with. It started in Australia maybe like 5 years ago, DFS, Daily Fantasy Sports. I bet on Draft Stars predominantly, which is the Australian version, and I did a lot on Moneyball before they shut down some 6-12 months ago. Okay. And a little bit on DraftKings in the US, but that's a much, much sharper market in the US, because a lot of them are playing DFS when, you know, gambling wasn't legal in the US, but DFS was considered legal. So a lot of the sharper minds were betting on that. So it's a tougher market to beat. So if anyone was looking to get into it in Australia, definitely recommend going on DraftStars, where it's a softer user base. I do a lot on NBA, rugby league, PGA as well. NBA is a heavily projection-based sport where you're looking at the projections of players for every day relative to their salary. And it's a very projectionable sport, similar-ish projection-wise to AFL with a lot of counting stats. Rugby league, from a fantasy point of view, there isn't the sort of projections out there like there is on NBA. Like on NBA, you could find any one of 20 websites producing quality projections on a daily basis. Rugby league, I think there might be one, and not quite as high quality. So that gives you an edge in the ability to beat it. NBA, everyone is using the same sort of projections. So it can be a little bit harder to be able to beat the field at it because everyone has access to that sort of thing. Rugby league, not so much. So, yeah, I use the process that I use to handicap games to also be, you know, handicapping players' fantasy points for each game.
Yeah, so you're not modeling that either. You're doing that strictly from
I do use one of the stats providers for it, but not a pure model. At this point, it's not really necessary, and there's not as much money and enough money in it to spend the sort of time to do that. But it's also not necessary. That the field's not sharp enough. If you just need to understand coaches' rotations each week. You know, when that big minute forward's only going to get 40 minutes this week, or whether the center on the bench is actually going to be playing backup hooker, so your starting hooker's not going to be getting 80 minutes like that they regularly do. So understanding some of those coaching mechanics, you know, is important to be able to beat that. But yeah, it's another nice little wrinkle to be able to bet on. You can't get banned at it, which is good.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I had my knowledge of daily fantasy sports is very limited, so these might be like really, really basic questions. But I do remember having a dabble around on the Moneyball. I think it was like 2 years ago or something like that. Is that is it mostly peer to peer stuff?
Yeah, so you'll have a tournament. So let's say for basketball today, DraftStars, the main tournament was a $30,000 tournament. Yeah, and it's all peer to peer. You're not betting against the house. So it's a tournament of, I think it was 2,300 players in the tournament. Today's one. So you're pitting your team or teams, because you can put multiple teams in, against other people's teams.
Yeah, it must be like a really tricky thing to do though off the top of your head, because I guess there's so many factors you have to take into account, like your salary and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, there is. Like I couldn't top of the head it in NBA and NFL and other sort of things. Yeah, you rely heavily on projections. I find it easier when, I'm following rugby league day in, day out, to top of the head a bit more.
Yeah, okay. And you're saying the main
thing... If you try and top of the head it on NBA, you just get creamed by it. The market will smash you.
Yeah, no, definitely. And so you're... I guess the main thing you're kind of looking at with those in terms of rugby league is you think one of the biggest things is minutes played for all, I guess, the forwards mostly.
For the forwards mostly, yes. Yeah, understanding those things is big. You know, on a rugby league market, on the market side, which I'll then use on fantasy, you know, I'll be looking at the strengths of one side and how they match up against the weaknesses of another side. So, say last year, Parramatta had a very, very weak right-hand side defense. That's the area you wanted to attack. Their left was much stronger. Their right was weak. So I want to know if the team they're playing this week has the ability or the desire to exploit that weakness. So are they going to go left? If they're playing like South and they had Cody Walker and they were doing a lot of wraparound plays with Latrell Mitchell down the left-hand side, they can exploit it. Penrith were playing heavy left with Jerome Luai and Stephen Crichton, they can exploit it. If they played like the Sharks, for instance, and Sean Johnson was playing, you know, they want to do everything down the right-hand side to Sean Johnson. So that's a better matchup for Parramatta because their weakness isn't going to be exploited. And then you can take that over into the fantasy space and say South is playing Parramatta. Well, I know they're going to head down the left-hand side. I want to have the Cody Walkers, the Latrell Mitchells and whoever the random winger is for that game, because that's the side that I expect them to pepper more than they would normally, or have more success than they normally would do.
Yeah,
sounds so you have more of those players in your fantasy team.
Yeah, no, definitely. It sounds like you're storing a lot of information in your head, mate. So my first thought is like, do you like, obviously you watch all the games every week. Are you taking notes or?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got Excel spreadsheet with it. Yeah. A bunch of comments written down. If I'm sitting at home, I might just start writing comments down on my phone and then put them back into my spreadsheet before the start of next weekend's game. So you can't store too much up there. The 8 games a week, yeah. So I'm writing down notes when they come. I might even be at the pub watching the game with my mates, and I'm on my phone writing down a note of some particular thing that even if it's not for that game, I'm like, oh, I think this team is a good team to exploit this weakness, or you know, small things like that.
Yeah, and depending on how many beers you've had depends on how good that note is.
probably.
I'd love to ask you more questions on the fantasy side of things, but I'm sorry, my knowledge is really, really limited. So we can move on to I wanted to ask you about the minimum bet laws. We had a fellow called Scott Ferguson, who's kind of, for those who don't know, he's very educated in all things gambling and the industry and all that kind of stuff. And he was mentioning to me that the minimum bet laws in Australia, he doesn't think, well, that the minimum bet laws are on racing. So I guess that's kind of the link here, how he doesn't think they're being fully followed or, by the bookmakers. So some of the bet laws are you can win up to $2,000 on big, well, we'll just call it big horse races in Australia for those in Europe. Do you follow Scott's thoughts here and think they're not really being followed all the way?
He's a good follower on Twitter, Scott Ferguson. They do get followed, but to a degree, yeah. I mean, if several people try and back the same horse at once, I think the bookmakers are allowed to take the first, like if they're coming literally at the same time, can take the first bet and then move the price and reject them. And then they might be a little bit lax about what they consider bets coming at the same time. So that's where they might not be fully following some of those laws. Yeah, they got it introduced a few years ago in Australia, and New South Wales was the first state to do it on horse racing, which was certainly a boon at the time. But then over time, added to those things has been additional taxes on horse racing. So the bookmakers passed on in higher takeout rates, worse prices for punters. So you were able to get on, but you were able to get on at a worse price. The minimum bet laws also meant that a lot of the software on the bookmakers limited you to exactly whatever the max bet was. So say it was to win 2,000. So it actually wouldn't even go through to a trader. If you want to say get on for 5,000 or 10,000, actually wouldn't go through to the trader for them to potentially let you on for more, so that you were consistently just getting on for whatever the minimum bet limit was. If your account was tagged with a bookmaker, so there was some negatives to it. But the big negative has been the taxes that have followed along with the horse racing, and then unfortunately with Peter Vallandis now in rugby league. Added those taxes last year into rugby league, and bookmakers passed them on. We're getting worse prices, and we don't even have minimum bet laws on any sports in Australia. So it's hard to get on, and when you can, it's not as good a price as you're used to getting on at.
Do you think the bookmakers like changed their models at all, or do you think they kind of just went down the route of just putting even bigger margins on the prices?
Yeah, they put bigger margins on the prices predominantly, yeah. Things that were $1.92 became $1.91, became $1.90. So, yeah, they gave themselves a bigger margin there because they were, I guess, paying more tax on it.
So would you say overall the minimum bet laws in general have helped you or not helped you?
I mean, they certainly have helped on horse racing to a degree. Yes, they've helped to a degree on horse racing because, yeah, I mean, I used to bet horse racing 5 days a week when I first started, but then it just became so difficult to get on. I'd sort of start only betting on like a Wednesday and a Saturday, which is the major metropolitan race meetings in Australia. So you could still sort of get on, and then you know every account I was having was banned, so came pretty pointless betting. I bet a bit on Saturdays here and there, And then, yeah, once the minimum bet law came in, it became a bit easier and you had more of a desire to continue betting.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
So I'd love to see that on sports, rugby league, rugby union, AFL in Australia, desperately needed.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you've heard Scott's thoughts, but he was basically saying he doesn't think it'll ever happen. So I don't know what you think of that.
But yeah, probably not. It's probably not a vote winner for administrators, politicians. It's just easier for them to sit on their hands and make short-term policy decisions that are a tax grab, and that's easier for them to do, even if it's not for the best long-term outlook of the sport or horse racing.
Yeah. Mate, one of the questions I ask basically every guest that comes on the podcast is, how could someone who has found an edge or been kind of successful in their betting take it to the next level? So what would be your, I guess, one piece of advice for those kind of people?
Get lots of bowler accounts. It depends a little bit on what your edge is on. Like if your edge is on a high liquidity sport like English Premier League soccer or tennis or NBA or something, go harder. If you've got the edge, I would say go harder. If your edge is on third division soccer leagues in Norway, get some bowler accounts. So it depends what it is.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's a good answer, mate. And I was wondering, just to finish up, if you had any thoughts on the upcoming season and any future bets or, you know, any teams you think that are underpriced at the moment or any little tips you've got for us, mate.
Yeah, I went through my market last week. I was relatively in lockstep at the top of the market. There's sort of four standout teams: Penrith, South, Melbourne, and the Roosters, who sort of sit there as the top four. And I'd probably expect the winner to come from one of those four teams. I think they were probably pretty efficiently priced. The one thing I did like for the Wooden Spoon or the least wins market was the Warriors. They're about sixth favorite or something, about $15-$17 mark. I have them a bit shorter than that. You know, last year they sort of defied a lot of expectations playing their whole season in away from New Zealand in Australia because of COVID. And at this point it's looking like that with border laws, they may be going down that same route again. They were hopeful of getting back and playing home games in New Zealand. But that's looking a little bit less likely at the moment. I also think they got a bit of a downgrade in coach from Todd Payton to Nathan Brown. You know, he's just another NRL retread coach who's already coached a few different places in Australia without success. So I think, yeah, certainly the bottom could completely fall out of the Warriors at 15s. That's the one value sort of thing that I liked. I think maybe one of the interesting teams is Manly. From a variant standpoint, I almost think that they have some value to win the comp and some value for least wins. They have a higher ceiling than a lot of the teams around them, like Newcastle, Gold Coast, Parramatta around them. They probably have a higher ceiling because they have more elite-level players than those. So if they remain injury-free, they would have better win equity than those other teams. But those players, Tom Trbojevic, Kieran Foran, have a lot of injury problems, and Tom Trbojevic's already injured. So the bottom could also fall out of Manly. So they're not a sort of team I'd be looking to back to make the top eight because they're not a safe team. They're a high variance team. They could go, if things fall in place and less injuries, they could win the comp. If they don't, they do have the ability to completely drop off the map. So yeah. That's one little thing to think about. Whilst Manly the seventh, eighth favourite for the comp at the moment, and a lot of the prices off that, like the derivative prices, your top fours, top eights, least wins, are all sort of based off that one price, but they actually have quite a lot of variance in where they could finish. So the derivative prices can be off a little bit. Yeah. That's one of those little nuances you try and find here and there.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Back to what you said about the Warriors, I think it's a lot of people were saying they think that they had their best season in a while just because they didn't have to travel. So I was wondering if you had any thoughts on that and the, you know, a second season where they most likely are not going to have to undertake all that travel that they normally have to.
Yeah, I think that was definitely true sort of in hindsight last year, perhaps not traveling and just being with your teammates 24/7. You didn't have family life to go back to. Everything was about rugby league, and you perhaps created a closer bond in the team. Did help them play well, and they won several times as big outsiders last year when the market didn't give them, including me, didn't give them much of a hope. I think that could wear thin a bit more second season. And it's also a different coach, whether you can stay as tightly knit a second season on the road. I think it could, might be a little bit thinner this year, and it does have the potential to just to drop off the map.
Cool. Awesome, mate. I'd love to go through every team with you and get your thoughts.
Next time. I can talk rugby league for hours.
Oh, mate, I could too. And it's a shame that most of our audience probably doesn't give a shit about rugby league. unless this podcast goes bang gangbusters, mate, it might be the last time we ever speak to each other.
Oh, what a great way to end.
No, I'm joking, mate. But no, mate, that was no terrific insight. And even though we did talk about, you know, mostly rugby league and a sport that's dominated by Australia, I think that there's lessons there for anyone, no matter what you're betting, because I guess most of our audience is mostly focused on basketball, like you said, but mostly also soccer, we call it, or football, whatever you want to call it. So, yeah, I think a lot of the things you talked about today are things that people can learn, yeah, from all around the world. So, mate, thank you very much for coming on.
Would you like me to do a bit more research on, like, some second division Swedish football for next time, like, to appeal to the audience more? I can do it.
I wouldn't have any questions for you, mate.
All right.
Mate, where can people find you and the work that you're doing? And, yeah, get in touch with you if they want to.
You can find me on Twitter if you want. The unfortunate handle of I'm Da Bomb 82. Maybe a naive decision when I signed up to Twitter like 12 years ago. Probably should change it now. I sound like a bit of a dick, but anyway. Oh, yeah, I'm Da Bomb 82. You can follow me.
It's a great handle. I mean, back in the day, that was the handle to have.
Yeah, on. I thought I was cool in my 20s.
Oh, mate, you certainly were the bomb back then. Oh, awesome, mate. Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone. Make sure you do a quick rate and review of the podcast. If you enjoyed the podcast, give us a thumbs up on YouTube, wherever you're listening. Give us a rate review. It always helps. And subscribe. And if you're looking to implement some of the strategies we talked about today, or, you know, we talk about weekly on the podcast, start a free week trial of Trademate Sports. Thanks again, Ryan, Chris, for coming on, mate.
No worries. Thanks very much for having me, Alex.